Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
What does one of our U.S. senators think about the Knoxville Nationals? Whistleblower protection, the dead zone in the Gulf, the right to farm, and civil dialogue. Let's go in depth with Senator Chuck Grassley from New Hartford.
Hi, Senator Grassley. How are you this morning?
Very good.
Well, great. It's Knoxville Nationals time, and I just thought you'd want to know that you're speaking to more than your constituents this morning.
And how does that happen?
Well, we've got a lot of people from all over the world here at the Knoxville Nationals. Oh, I don't know, maybe...
Yes, you mean because of what's going on in Knoxville right now.
That's right.
I've been there. That's quite a thing to attend. And, you know, the noise, you almost need earplugs. The noise is so bad. But people sure enjoy it, don't they?
Well, they sure do. When do you think you were here last?
Oh, I think now it's probably been 5 or 6 years. But I was there for a long period of the competition. Well, just actually one event, but it, you know, went on for several hours. So I had a chance to see it. I had a chance ahead of time to walk around, you know, and meet some of the famous drivers. I don't remember who they are, but, you know, some of the real champions.
So can we say that you're a sprint car racing fan?
Well, you can say that I sure enjoyed it while I was there, and it was my first opportunity to ever see sprint car, and I can sure understand the enthusiasm of people for it, but I'm more of a, you know, a football, basketball type fan than I am racing, and that's not derogatory towards racing, because I've even gone to the Newton racetrack as an example.
Well, I think that just like everybody's Dutch and Pellet tulip time, I think this weekend we're all sprint car racing fans. How's that?
Yeah, well, that's for sure. And I've got a son that on television watches a lot of the NASCAR stuff. And the only thing that I haven't done in racing that I should have done years ago, and I don't know that I'll ever do it, but I think it'd be a good thing to go to the Indianapolis 500 sometime.
Oh, yeah. Well, perhaps you'll make it someday.
Yeah.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Senator Chuck Grassley.
Well, Senator, let's get to your work. And I've been reading about some and listening and hearing some work that you've been doing about the False Claims Act, the Whistleblower Act. Can you fill us in on that?
Yeah. It happens that I got a bill passed in 1986, now 30 years old, called the False Claims Act. It gives people that know about the fraudulent use of taxpayers' money, if the government won't prosecute it, those individual citizens can get a lawyer and go into court. And if they win, they get a percentage of it. That's brought $42 billion back into the federal treasury. Now, that's $42 billion with a B. It's been very successful. It's the number one tool against fraud, waste, fraudulent use of taxpayers' money. And it probably has a deterrent effect that much higher than $42 billion, but you can't ever measure that. That's been under attack in the last 30 years, first by military contractors, then later they weren't successful, so then the hospitals tried fighting it because they thought it was hurting them, and then later on pharmaceuticals. Most of it lately has been in the healthcare area, and they haven't been successful. In fact, most of the money lately, fraudulent use of taxpayers' money, has come from health care generally, but more specifically from pharmaceuticals. So they now go to the respected organization, the Chamber of Commerce, and they tell you they want to strengthen the bill. But what they want to do is weaken the bill. So what I've done is speak out before the House Judiciary Committee that's considering the Chamber of Commerce legislation, tell them how wrong it is. And I'm going to continue to fight it. I think we can defeat the Chamber of Commerce, but it's a little bit different going up against the Chamber of Commerce than it is going up against, you know, a segment of American business like military or pharmaceutical or healthcare.
Seeing a top Republican working against the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is sort of an odd thing. How are you, at least that's my interpretation. And so how are your colleagues taking this?
Well, so far it hasn't got a high enough visibility that I've had any conversations with my colleagues about it. But the mere fact that the House Judiciary Committee is holding a hearing on it is something that I consider threatening. And so I've got to beef up my defense of the False Claims Act, and particularly emphasizing the $42 billion it's brought back into the federal treasury, and to denigrate their efforts. And I think we can be successful. And you're right. Most of the time, from the standpoint of being a free enterprise, free market person, I agree with the Chamber of Commerce most of the time. But this is one time when we're going to have to separate. We're going to have to separate our ways.
And so are you looking at this particularly closely, you know, as it's in the House Judiciary Committee because of your role in the on the Senate Judiciary Committee?
Yeah. That's one of the things where I think my being on the Judiciary Committee and generally Democrats supporting my position and some Republicans supporting my position, I think we can kill it. And if we're able to, the Republicans win control of the Senate, I get to be chairman of the committee, then I think it's pretty obvious that we can put a stop to it.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Senator Chuck Grassley.
There's been a lot of press lately about farming and loss of topsoil, and this morning I heard that the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico is the size of Connecticut. It's 5,000 square miles. Do you think that a lot of the voluntary efforts that our farmers engage in saving our soil and keeping nutrients out of our waterways, do you think that that's enough, or does more need to be done?
Well, let me, first of all, it's been worse. Now, I'm not saying what you're saying is bad, is not bad, but when we started out with soil conservancy laws that were first part of the 1986 Farm Bill, beyond that, you could ruin your farmland, not worry about erosion, still participate in the farm program. So then starting in 1986, we passed what we call the Soil Conservancy Law, that if you participated in the farm program, you had to do certain things like minimum tillage, whatever it took to stop a certain amount of farmland going down the river. Prior to that, we were losing about 10 ton per acre per year. Now, in the last 25 years, we've got that down to 5 or 6 ton per acre. Now, that's still a major problem, but at 5 or 6 ton per acre, it's renewable, I think, experts have said. So now we're to a point where in the last 2 or 3 years, there's been an effort from state government through agricultural groups to have further programs for stopping soil erosion. And those are, like you said, voluntary. And I think before I say that they aren't adequate, and I'm not condemning you if you say they aren't adequate, but until they're tried for a while, I think we ought to see how they work. And we do have, a year ago, the director of the EPA coming to the state fair in Iowa and speaking positively about the voluntary provisions that state government's promoting.
Okay. I've been reading and hearing a lot about what's called right-to-farm legislation, which, you know, is one of those labels that, you know, who could be against the right-to-farm? But some people say that right-to-farm legislation amendments would sort of get in the way of any efforts to try to save our water and our land and preserve our water. And so there's some pushback both ways on this. Do you have any thoughts on this right to farm amendments that are appearing?
Also, there's some pushback, though, because of animal rights organizations trying to tell people how to farm and doing terrorist activity against certain farming operations. So you may be asking that because I understand that by a very narrow margin yesterday, the Missouri voters added to the Constitution a right-to-farm provision. Now, I'm not entirely acquainted with the principle right-to-farm, and maybe that's because, you know, you just take for granted you own land, you ought to be able to farm it, and if you're going to be a good farmer, you're going to farm it responsibly. So this may be something I got to get used to. I'm not sure exactly. I can speculate what was going on in Missouri, probably state governments creating some problems for farmers, the federal EPA with undue regulation, like we'll say trying to control every drop of water that falls on a farm, and the soil erosion from what they call fugitive dust, and you've heard me talk about that in the past, and then these animal rights people. So people in Missouri got upset and promoted this constitutional amendment, and I don't know to what extent it's going to meet the requirements of the federal Constitution, that the U.S. Constitution and laws passed under the U.S. Constitution are the supreme law of the land. That's what the federal Constitution says in Article 5. So I don't know where this is going to come out, but I can understand the frustration of farmers generally wanting the Constitution to protect their right to farm. They probably figured that under the Fifth Amendment, the right to of eminent domain, that you can't have your be deprived of the use of your property without fair compensation. Sometimes regulations done that, and so this is an additional reinforcement of the Fifth Amendment.
Well, language is so powerful in the sense that, you know, you used a word before, animals rights, terrorists, right to farm, and it's just, and fugitive dust and things like that. Words are so powerful in the sense that they sort of polarize everything and make things either really bad or really good, when really isn't there sort of a middle ground where real people talk, where we can talk about respecting farmers' rights, but then also respecting the rights of people to have quality water and quality air.
I think you can do that between government, because there is a process of government for that sort of discussion you're talking about. And most of that is civil, even if there's strong views. But when it comes to animal rights, as an example, they don't particularly want to talk. They want to take action to make their point and things of that nature. Now, I don't, I guess all of the animal rights groups would not use terrorist activities, but some of them do, you know, like going to a mink farm and letting the mink out, going to well, I'm not sure I can give you other examples. That's the most often example you hear about. You know, just letting animals out of cages and stuff like that.
Well, sure, we understand that. And, you know, a lot of us have heard about that. It's just, I'm wondering, is if we sort of characterize views that we disagree with, if we characterize them in terms of their extremes, both on the right and the left, don't we lose something by that?
Yeah, but, and I guess what you're saying is something that you could say that words make a difference. But people try to do whatever can get the attention of people. You know, you've got so much whirling around you every day that people know that you got so much on your mind. How can they get your attention? Well, words sometimes get your attention that other words wouldn't get your attention. So it's a tool. It's how you act. I think it's how you act. If you act out your words, I think that's bad. If you just say your words, that's not bad. Let's go back to the Smith Act of 1940s that was declared unconstitutional. We passed the Smith Act saying if you advocated the overthrow of the government, you could be imprisoned. The courts ruled that the advocacy of the overthrow of government, you couldn't be imprisoned. Only if you took action to overthrow the government could you be imprisoned. So the law was declared unconstitutional.
Well, these are pretty complex topics, and we aren't going to resolve them today. Just that we see that the use of words are so inflammatory anymore, and sometimes they just obscure the truth, and you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Well, I'm going to finish my 21 county town meetings to finish the 99 that I do for the 34th year in a row, and I'll be done with that. I'll be going to the state fair a couple days. I'll be doing some political events. I'll be taking a 5-day family vacation and be back to Washington, D.C. on September the 8th. Reed says we're going to adjourn for the fall, September 23rd. Normally, we wouldn't adjourn in a election year until maybe the second week of October. So that kind of signals to me that Reed has some fear that Democrats may lose control of the Senate, and he wants his people out campaigning a couple weeks earlier. And I can't look beyond September 23rd, but I'll be in Iowa during the fall election holding official meetings and helping Republicans campaign for office.
Well, we look forward to seeing you the next time you're in Marion County, Senator.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Thanks to Senator Chuck Grassley for contributing to the program.
For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.